Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 50. Oh my God, 50 episodes in. I can't believe it. All I can say is, Incredamazeballs is the word to describe that we've made it this far. And thank you for continuing to listen. We genuinely appreciate your support. I also want to say that next week will be the last episode of the Nerdist Podcast for 2010. And we thought that would be fitting to make that the Comedians You Should Know special, which was recorded live at Meltdown Comics on December 15th. Just great comedians doing stand-up in front of a phenomenal audience. This guy's like Jonah Ray of this very podcast. Matt Bronger, Kyle Kinane, Jackie Cation, Chris Fairbanks, and others. So that'll be up the week between Christmas and New Year's. I would also like to say that Nerdist Podcast veteran Scott Sigler is offering Nerdist Podcast listeners a special deal on his books, The Rookie and The Starter, which are part of the Galactic Football League series. Essentially, it's sort of a cross between The Godfather and Any Given Sunday and Star Wars. So if you go to scottsigler.com/GFL, you can get free shipping, free gift wrapping. Plus, you'll get $3 off one book or $7 off a two-book set if you use the checkout code NERDIST. So make sure and do that. Totally appropriate for children. It's not. It does not get the explicit tag like we earn so many times on this podcast. Which, by the way, let's talk about this podcast, episode number 50, with the Sklar brothers. The Sklar brothers are twins. So that's like what happens if you get two peanuts in one shell. They look very similar. They're hard to tell apart, but they taste slightly differently. The Sklar brothers and I have been friends for a long time. They are terrific guys. I love them to death. And they also have a podcast called Sklarborough Country under the Earwolf umbrella. So here you go. Really, this is super fun. I love talking to super famous people and talking about their processes. But I also love just having friends on that I think are hilarious, that are a delight to hang out with. So I'm not saying the Sklar brothers aren't super famous. I mean, they're not Ozzy Osbourne. I think they'd be fine saying that. I mean, maybe together they could combine to form an Ozzy Osbourne, like the character Station from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. But they're great guys, and so I hope you enjoy the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 50, with the Sklar brothers.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Okay, I have coffee. You have coffee.
And he never drinks his water.
Do you mind if I sit in the middle between you guys?
Yeah.
Just because,
right?
I like getting a fight. Yeah, I read the 48 Laws of Power. This is the power chair.
You are the power chair.
Oh, it's all warm from Jonah's body. Jonah's body. Starring Megan Fox.
I love that, yeah.
Jonah's body.
Where we were driving back
starring,
up from...
Kathleen Turner.
Starring Kathleen Turner.
We were driving back up from into a man. My, when you were driving, like, my side of the car was all, like, steamy.
Yeah, that's right.
My body heat.
Yeah, poor Jonah. Jonah's a tall guy, so when you're driving with him, his head will hit the ceiling of the car hard.
Wow.
Because he's that big. But hey, enough about our fucking car antics. This is the Nerdist Podcast. Matt Myers on my right, Jonah Ray's on my left. I'm Chris Hardwick. And sitting across from me, the Sklar brothers, Jason and Randy.
Thank you
finally,
very much.
Finally,
We wanted
you
this
go Jason or Randy? I usually say Randy and Jason. No, no offense. But.
Well, they're Jason and Randy. So
yeah, I know.
He reads right to left.
I do. I'm
like
Chinese.
The Hebrew Bible.
Oh,
right to left.
Like the true original Bible.
You are now
so if we could all just take for a minute to read from the Torah.
Yeah, uh-huh. This show is about scripture. Am I right or am
I don't
I wrong?
Know? It really yeah, is. So you've listened to the show.
I listened to the show and I'm like amazed at how much you parse the verses. I mean, well, really where you picked up where the 700 Club left off.
I try to bridge the worlds. Is it weird that my yarmulke has a crucifix on it?
No,
is that not,
it doesn't.
Is that okay?
No, that it's in the shape of
Jews for Jesus.
You know, that's my other car is a yarmulke.
Really?
Yeah.
That's really great.
And so when he hits his head on the top, Velcro sticks yarmulke on his
onto his head, and then God pats him on the head.
I wanted to convert very badly to Judaism when I was a child because my reasoning for this, my mother would never let me, but my reasoning was I wanted to go into comedy, and I thought you had to be Jewish.
You do.
I kind of do.
I thought you had to be Jewish.
Oh, you do. It is two Jews sitting across from three non-Jews. I'm saying that. For the record, you look very Jewish. You should be a Jew. And I mean that as an insult.
Yeah, I could have passed.
When I was a kid, I thought you had to be Canadian because like a lot of comics I liked were all Canadian. And I used to tell people in like Hawaii.
I got to move up to Canada.
It was sixth grade and I was reading sign language. The Jerry Seinfeld bit.
Sure, sure.
I was like,
yeah.
I gotta do this.
I thought you were talking about Marlene
Mattenspire. My favorite Jew, story
also
in
Jew.
Sign
also
language,
a Jew.
The funniest bit, and this just showed like how great Seinfeld was. Like even in a book, he could come up with something that just made you laugh. Was his bit about the paperweights? He was just like, "What? Why are there like offices where just like wind is blowing
off the desks? Like
that's why
like,
you know weighing down."
What I always loved about Seinfeld is that, like, when I looked at the other comics that I always liked growing up, they tended to be weirder, mm-hmm. more character-y kind of based. Emo Phillips, Steve Martin. I mean, even though I loved. You know, Richard Pryor and Sam Kinison and those guys too. But with Seinfeld,
Did you love Richard Pryor as like a little kid?
I did because my parents knew that I was into comedy, so they would just record all this stuff. So I had a copy of Live on the Sunset Strip, and it was one of the specials that I, you know, like when we first got a VHS player in like 81 or whatever.
Yes. How much of it did you get? How much of it did you understand?
There was some of it that I didn't understand, but I certainly understand like when he talked about the squirrel monkey fucking his ear and it felt like a wet Q-tip. Like,
yes.
Of course I understand it because who hasn't been fucked in the ear?
As an eight or 9 year old,
right? I went to Catholic school, so
Wet
willies are very they have
wet
a lot
willies.
Of that
why don't, I don't understand why when you mention your dad, you don't say Pro Bowling Hall of Fame. Dad.
Or to imply.
Because it's a sport.
Do you know that I went when you told me that and it took a long time for us, you know, I think it was we knew each other from Back on Tops when you were doing it with us. And we had some time to just BS around. And
one of the best series. I mean, and I mean internet or television back on Tops. It's fucking hilarious. And I don't understand dick about sports, and I loved your show.
Yeah. And you were nominated for a Streamy Award.
I got nominated for
Guest Star. Guest Star.
No, I didn't win that Streamy.
I think Shmooley was robbed.
Yeah, you were in it as well. The guy who
I watched it.
Janet Varney was in it.
Janet Varney was in it.
And then a bunch of sports people.
I remember you guys had to keep on telling me how to say the Jewish words over and over again.
Well, because I love that we like are trying to force all... This goes back to what we were saying, Matt, that we're trying to force all of our friends
into
who aren't Jewish into Judaism.
How'd you get into Judaism? Well, it was the web series Back on Tops.
It really pulled me in.
It's kind of like when a character and an actor smokes for a character.
And
then he just
starts
smoking. Yeah.
I don't think anyone will deny that Back on Tops is a gateway drug.
It's a religious gateway series and a sports gateway series. But anyway, you were telling us, like, I think there that your dad was a professional bowler, and we like, and the fact that who is it, Chris Schenkel?
That was named after Chris Schenkel.
You were named after Chris Schenkel, the announcer who had that sort of like, I mean, that guy smoked. That guy smoked a lot. Like that guy smoked while he was broadcasting, and just like you could feel the gravel in his voice. But I went on YouTube and just watched footage of your dad, and it looked like an older 70s version of you bowling.
Yeah.
which is so phenomenal. Which was amazing. And the one thing about your dad that, again, and we bowled when we were kids. We were in like bowling leagues as kids. And our dad bowled. Like our dad and his brothers and like his parents, they were in bowling leagues in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
So they loved it. But what your dad did was he put no spin on the ball.
Yeah.
Like, that was so, like, I want to say revolutionary, but just so different.
Revolution. My dad's had rheumatoid arthritis since he was 12 years old. And so when he first started bowling, he used the wrong fingers. He used his index finger and his middle finger and his thumb.
Right.
And then I think for a while in the beginning, I'm not even sure he put his two top fingers in the ball.
Wow. So it's just
and then later on he put the right fingers in there. So, you know, he just, because he has limited range of motion, he couldn't, it was harder to crank the ball back then. Because you're really talking about hard rubber and wood, and that was it.
Right.
And now there's so much technology, and if you watch bowling, they fucking...
Oh, we do.
You do, of course.
Oh, we watch bowling.
They crank... I wrote an article in Wired about it, about how...
Well, there's music now, and...
Yeah.
It's just like...
But the technology of the game, my dad would always complain, like, it's so easy now. It used to be about spares. The game's all about strikes now, because the technology makes it so easy. Yeah. And it turns out they built this robot that would just throw strike after strike, and they realized that the composite material they make bowling balls from, it has like glass particles in it to grab onto the lane. And that's why the ball hooks so hard. And they realized, you know, they started to realize, like, oh, yeah, this technology's kind of made the cover stock of bowling balls a little too easy. Yeah.
Well, it's like tennis. I mean, back in the day, you look at an old tennis racket from the 70s, and it's about, like...
The size of your wallet.
Yeah, it's the size of your wallet.
Small. Like old skateboards, too. It used to be really thin.
Yeah. And now these things, you go look at it, and, like, it's huge. So the sweet spot is so big. So anybody, you can make a mistake, and still, same with golf clubs, you can make a mistake now and still hit a good shot. Or bowl a good lane, or bowl a good
bowl
line.
Bowl a good lane?
I don't know what I'm saying anymore.
That's what Giants do. They bowl a good lane.
Yeah, they bowl actual full lanes.
No, Van Winkle.
It just makes it easier.
Yeah, the drivers look like they have fucking Volkswagen bugs on the end of them.
Small children hanging off the bottom of them.
Yeah. That's right, just to really grab the ball with their hands. Mm-hmm. I have the Hammer X that guy's doing.
Oh, you got to keep it?
I did.
Nice.
It's not a bad club. I play golf every once in a while.
Do you really? Let's play sometime.
I love
I would love to.
Yeah. Are you in? Do you play? Do you really?
I'm in.
Let's play.
Holy shit.
You guys sound like you need a caddy.
Yeah.
I'll be the caddy.
Lemonade.
That cool, refreshing drink.
Now, we watch so much comedy. I think that's so fascinating. We watch so much comedy as kids in the same way. I mean, we watched, there was the Rodney Dangerfield special.
Young Comedian.
The 9th Annual Young Comedian special was one of those specials that...
One of those things that...
Was the 9th Annual with Robert Townsend?
No, the 9th Annual was Saget, Rita Rudner, Louis Anderson, Kinison.
Maurice LaMarche.
Maurice LaMarche.
Yeah.
Yep.
Who does a lot of voices on The Simpsons.
I've worked with him a shitload on shows at Nickelodeon and stuff.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Who else was in? Bob Nelson.
Bob Nelson. Loved Bob Nelson.
Bob Nelson with the routine with putting the balloons in.
Number 72. Yeah. Oh, shit. 27.
Yeah.
Did you ever see him do his goldfish bit?
No.
Where he'd blow bubbles and then he would make this little fish face and eat the bubbles like fish food.
Now, as a comedian who occasionally does the road, just think of the amount of shit he had to travel with.
Oh,
after doing two shows on a Saturday night, now I bet he had a third late show to take the balloons out.
Yeah, but
again,
to be fair, you have to pack a brother. I mean,
I do.
Do they charge extra for him? Or
$25 on American Airlines now.
You can't carry him on.
No,
I will not fit in the overhead bin.
Now that they're charging for everyone, everyone's bringing their brothers, and they want to carry them on.
Well, it sucks. You try to get them into the jetway, and they make you gate check him, and it's just a fucking...
Which, again, if they were to just leave me out there when you exit the jetway,
it just makes more sense. Instead of making me go all the way back down to baggage claim and pick him up,
it's such a pain in the ass.
I just don't want to fly tonight. You guys are talking about this.
No, it's good. Are you going to? Hopefully, you'll get the full body scan.
Yeah, you're going to have to get
fly tonight.
Yeah.
The worst.
I can't wait to not.
It is the worst.
I haven't flown with a person. The last time I flew with somebody was with Jonah, and we were on opposite aisles.
Okay.
We were
both uncomfortable for different reasons.
And my girlfriend is going to be with me. I'm going to be on the aisle seat, and I'm terrified of my elbow.
Are you terrified of flying in general?
No, flying's fine. I just don't.
I hate it because I'm so uncomfortable. I have to. I can't
knee
afford.
Does this awesome thing where if it's bent for more than an hour, it fucking kills.
It locks?
Yeah.
Does it pop in and lock?
Oh. Anyway,
it's a pop and lock.
Podcast listeners.
Are you guys on the road a lot right now?
You know,
we've been on the road a little bit.
We did Helium up in Portland.
Isn't that a great... Oh, I haven't done Portland, but I did Philly. How's Portland?
Portland, take Philly
times 20.
Which, I mean, Philly is great.
Okay.
And then
Philly's amazing.
Philly's great. Portland is unreal. Like, I wish we would have recorded there this weekend, or that weekend.
That weekend we did. And we did the Punchline in San Francisco.
Another great club. You know, there are just a handful of clubs where they really are performer-friendly.
Get it
and
right.
It's like the Helium, Punchline. I was just at Laughing Skull.
Oh, I heard that's Comics. Good. We're going to Comedy Works in Denver.
Comedy Works in Denver, the downtown club, is fucking awesome.
Going there. Amazing.
And you guys, forever ago, had said... you've got to do the Arlington Draft House.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I finally just did it in amazing. September, and it was phenomenal.
And we have to get back there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I love that spot.
They're very nice there, too.
Yeah, right? Remember? We took you there, Jonah.
Are you, yeah, you were, nice. You were in D.C. doing something else?
No, I flew out there.
Out there with us.
Yeah, with you guys. And then we...
and then we taped a little Back on Top.
Yeah, we went to the Camden Yards.
In Camden Yards for the day, yeah. And that was really
so much fun.
So I want to backpedal a little bit, because before we get to Back on Tops and how that came together, of course, you guys did Cheap Seats forever. And yeah,
Thank you.
It was a hard. I enjoy watching you guys, but I didn't understand most of what you were saying because I don't know sports.
Right.
And we had this long talk about how our culture now has a lot of different shades of nerds.
Yes.
And you were like, and we're sports nerds, and like people like you guys know stats, and you know people, and you know years, and you know awards, and that is pretty nerdy.
Even though
on the surface it's sportsy. So how did that show come about?
We did a whole special on ESPN after we had done some Cheap Seats, trying to get this guy who is a utility player.
Meaning he doesn't play every day,
but
he plays multiple different positions in baseball.
Okay,
he's one of the only guys who played all 9 positions in one season. Like he pitched, which is a rare thing. Like he
pitched
professionally.
Normally, like they bring in an outfielder to pitch in a game when it's way out of reach, and the guy gives up like 20 runs. I mean, it's
very rare for someone to throw to more than one or two batters if you're not really a pitcher.
This guy, we brought him in. We were at the game. His name was Jose Oquendo.
He pitched for like two innings
and struck out Deion. He struck someone out.
Okay,
I mean, like a position player.
But he was one of these guys who was just sort of like an unsung guy. Who you had to know baseball. And you had to appreciate the sort of very tiny, specific, nuanced elements of baseball in the nerdiest of all ways.
Okay.
So we did a whole special on ESPN, too, on how to
try and get
him into the Hall of Fame.
All right.
And which will never happen. Never, never in a million years happen.
They don't let utility players
in the Hall of Fame? It'd be like getting... I mean, it'd be like John Malkovich, or I'm trying to think of someone who's, or Stephen Tobolowsky, who's like a...
Getting into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, getting into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
He's got a better shot of getting into the Baseball Hall of Fame. No, but like winning an Academy Award. It's like, it'll never happen.
I think he was robbed for the character of Ned Ryerson in Groundhog Day, if we want
to
talk about it.
Needle Nose Ned.
Needle Nose Ned. Ned the Head.
Yeah.
He was just
great. So anyway, So the way that show came about is that we had a friend, someone we... had known for years, Gary Belsky, who was an editor of ESPN, the magazine. And the magazine was like the one thing that grew the most
at ESPN.
And at that time, it totally surpassed Oprah's magazine. And it was like this huge money-making entity. And they were very much on the cutting edge, even much more so than SportsCenter and anything else, on what was new and now. And they just really were on the edge of what was sports. And so the network started to look to them and they said, well, do you guys have any ideas for programs that we could do in a huge like company-wide meeting? And so they asked them, we have this channel called ESPN Classic, which just shows like old games and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have any ideas for that? And one of their ideas was watch us watch the old games. And they weren't sure.
If they were going to do dinner and a movie, or if they were going to do it Mystery Science
Mystery
Theater.
Sports Theater.
Right. They were like, we're not sure what we want to do. So anyway, we were out of work we had been working pretty nonstop from like 97 to like 2000.
Oh, we'll talk about apartment 3F.
Apartment
2F.
3F was actually where we lived in New York, but 2F.
Yeah, but so we had not worked for I don't know, about 6 months. It was 2001. I don't know. It was just a weird
9/11.
Time.
9/11. I thought on 9/11.
Yeah, why not? Drop it down.
I'll drop
down. You're not afraid.
I'm not afraid.
9/11, which by the way, the best thing ever said to us about 9/11 was by Morgan Murphy, who said, a very funny comedian, who said, did you guys take 9/11 harder than other people because you're twins?
It's hilarious.
And if you don't know Morgan Murphy, he's just the driest delivery.
Dead serious.
So funny.
And for a second, I have to say that like on September 12th, 2001, there was a brief moment where I was like, oh my God, are we next?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
You don't know. You got to be careful about who gets
on
you.
Then we called Zach and Cody, and they were only 6 at the time. We're like, don't hang out.
Don't hang out. Get
away from each other.
You are definitely.
Yeah, they have a pretty sweet life.
More of a on deck.
I was just in Atlanta, and I heard a woman in the Atlanta airport, which is a terrible airport, by the way.
Awful. It's like it's sectioned off into like different barns. Like
it's like if they built an airport in a bee colony. Like it's just fucking like chambers, and there's so many compartments, and there's tons of people. But I heard, I don't know why this bothered me so much, but I heard a woman talking to someone else, and she was like, things just haven't been the same since 9/11. And I think what was irritating about it is that it sounded like it sounded like the way that she was saying it, there was a pretense of she was trying to give it more weight.
Yeah, right.
And that's like, why she said 911.
She's talking about things haven't been the same since she dialed 111.
911. Or since the Public Enemy song, 911 is a joke.
Oh, she did say fuck the police, right?
She did, right. She said 911 a long time ago.
Yeah.
It's like when our Aunt Rita, God bless her, she just turned like, what, 78 or something? She
was talking to us about comedy.
At one point in time, she was talking to us, she said, you know who I don't like? I don't like that Jay Leno. I was like, who's ever just like read it? Because if you read it, and you only
it
know
looks like
the
Leno,
word
if
Reno,
you go from Janet Reno.
But like, who doesn't? Who
is
no,
that
never
how
heard
supposed
it
to say it?
I think
Jay
it is.
Leno.
I remember like Christina Ricci like said that once. Like
did
he was saying, isn't your name supposed to be like Ricky or something like that? Like, and she's like, I don't know, isn't you're supposed to be Leno? He's like, all right.
Yeah, drop the tap potato.
My headline.
Now touring the five Lenos. Crunch all you want. We'll make more.
Get a call.
And scene.
And now that everyone stopped listening, we can really get into the...
Don't ever do the five Lenos again.
The bit that killed Nerdist podcast.
Just hobbled it at the ankles. Took off the show's feet.
So our buddy had the show idea. We were in New York for a wedding. Not even for work or anything.
Bart Coleman.
Bart and Rebecca, those are wonderful people.
Bart Coleman, who for years worked at Comedy Central and
he's in the Ferguson show now. I just saw him the last
night. He's a great
friend of comedy, and he's a great guy. We were there for his wedding, and we met this guy Gary for breakfast. We're like, "What are you up to?" And he's like, "I got this show idea. I just need two guys who have really good chemistry, who know a lot about sports, who can be funny." And then he didn't say anything. He was like, can you guys pass the syrup?
We're like, what?
Wait, why would you not ask us to do this, Gary?
Do you guys know another set of twins?
Yeah,
who
you guys
are comedy?
Get us in touch with, yeah. So he said, I didn't think you guys would want to do something on ESPN Classic. It's not as big as some of the other places you've done stuff. And we thought, well, first of all, we haven't worked in a while, so we'll do anything at this point. But also, maybe that's the perfect place to do this because... And it was in many ways, and then in many ways it wasn't. It was kind of we felt the double-edged sword of it, which was it was amazing because we got to do whatever we wanted.
Yep.
But there was we kind of ran into it a little bit with them not understanding what it is we were doing. Like there was a brief period of time where
they wanted a
studio audience to be, and there were like six studio audience shows at the beginning of season two that we fought against. We're like, this is not a studio audience show. This is us hanging out on the couch, and the people at home are hanging out with us at 2 in the morning when they get home from the bar, and this is not them watching us deliver that. It's not that type of show.
Especially if you want to fly, if you want to fly 10 quick jokes really fast,
right.
The audience will throw that rhythm off, and you want to just have that connection with the viewer.
It was really hard, and they were like, and they were using like a model of, thinking from like 87. And
they're like, this is our late night variety show, which is what they didn't realize they were going to get, because... What happened was they said, okay, we came in and pitched a ton of ideas. We went to this big meeting. Gary's like, if you guys want to pitch on this, I'll pitch you guys as the host and you come in and pitch ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So we came into this huge ESPN meeting. We pitched 100 segment ideas and we talked about tons of jokes and we talked sports for like an hour, and they ultimately decided to go with us. But I think they thought they were going to get what they've been doing all along, which was just a sports show that was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
But our attitude was like, look, we want to make a comedy show that
about
has sports as the backdrop.
Right.
So we want people to say, I watch this show and I watch The Daily Show and I watch Conan and I watch Arrested Development. That's what I watch. Not I watch Cheap Seats and then I also watch SportsCenter.
And when you start saying that thing, did their heads all cocked to the side? Like when
we didn't say that. We just did it.
Oh, okay, okay, okay.
Fortunately, we didn't say that.
That was our unspoken sort of rule. We were trying to achieve because we were in that comedy world and we didn't want to just be known. It's so funny. I feel like we've sort of jumped into so many things. As twins, we're like, we don't want to be known as the twins who do comedy. We want to be known as a great comedy team who just happens to be twins.
Mm-hmm.
Or that's what makes them unique. Well, we don't want it to be a sports show that's funny. We
mm-hmm.
want it to be a comedy that it just so happens that
we
the
want
thing
it to be the one show about sports that comedy people are like, I don't. No sports. I don't like sports, but this is just so silly. Watching these guys make fun of kids at a spelling bee is funny. That's just funny.
Or like a show like, well, the thing that was great and what was attractive to us, and I think there's something in it almost in the web soup that, the stuff that you do and finding the videos and stuff is there was a time
at ESPN where they didn't have all four contracts, you know, Major League Baseball and the NFL and, you know, the NBA and the NHL when it was relevant, but like they didn't have all the major they didn't have all the major contracts, and yet they still had 24 hours of programming to fill. So you would get these programs like Super Dogs, Super Jocks, which was Olympic caliber athletes and their dogs.
It's a long episode.
And their dogs going through like the same obstacle course. Like a a dog would go through this obstacle course, and then like Bill Lundquist, who was an Olympic swimmer, would have to like jump through the same
like thing. Basically what looked like a 4-year-old's birthday party.
Only like,
you know, why shouldn't we turn Olympic athletes into performing dogs?
What was the theme party? Was that? It was some sea place in California that no longer exists.
It was just.
Oh yeah, there was a that's out in Palos Verdes. We shot MTV there. We shot there in like 98. It was God damn it. I can't remember the name of it. I think it was tied into Hanna-Barbera too.
Yeah. So there were water theme park. It was
It was a Marineland.
Marineland.
Yeah, it's terrible. An abandoned water park.
Oh, it's terrible.
Nothing more sad than that.
We're like, that's funny to us, and how can we make that funny to everybody? And so, I mean, and for us as well, you know, we talked to friends of ours like Michael Ian Black and Michael Showalter, who was a part of our show. He played, the show was called Cheap Seats Without Ron Parker. The idea of the show is that it was supposed to be given to a SportsCenter like guy, Showalter being that guy who was just a total dick to the two of us, and we were his researchers. And then in the first 30 seconds of the first episode,
he gets crushed
by a tape shelf. So he goes on injured reserve, and we take over for him, and it becomes our show. And so, you know, we talked to those guys, and Michael Black.
Pretty high concept for ESPN.
I know,
it was.
And Michael Black is always like amazed that we got 77 episodes. I mean, he's done a few seasons of his show, but he was always like, whenever I talked to him, like, God, it's really crazy that you guys were able to go that deep. And I think our best stuff wound up coming in the fourth season, you know, or the third or fourth season. And so.
But the downside of that is we've been fighting for them for years to make a DVD.
Like when they're not available?
They are not yet, but they will be.
They will be. We're finally doing it. We basically are taking the onus off of ESPN through this guy, a fantastic guy, Stan Brooks, who is a producer. He's done a lot of TV movies. He did Broken Trail, which won an Emmy with
Robert Duvall.
And he did like the Bobby Knight story on ESPN and
with Ryan Dennehy.
Yeah, so he's done some stuff, and he's a fan of ours. And when we guest host Jim Rome's radio show, which is a sports, he's like the Howard Stern of sports talk radio. He's a fan of us when we do that, and he said, I would love to help you guys, because he's wrestled some projects away from ESPN so he could do the DVD. So he's like, I know what to do. And so we...
Finally, we're getting to do it. If you do a show for Comedy Central or anything like that...
You finish the first season, and you're already doing the DVD of it.
Yeah, yeah, it's part of the model.
That goes with it. And then the thing... I mean... Like, I don't know, are you guys, you guys should do like a web soup comedy tour. Like, that would be great.
Well, every once in a while, we'll do a Nerdist podcast live.
I heard the one at Comic-Con where you interview the Mythbuster. I mean, that was at Comic-Con.
That was at Comic-Con, but like, we'll do, like, we just did the Bumbershoe Festival.
Yeah, and, yeah.
You know.
Twice maybe at Tiger Lily we had like everyone that did comedy that works on Web Soup do a show.
Yeah,
that's cool, and we would love again because we were so associated with comedy. I mean, everybody in comedy did our show.
I feel like there is a real opportunity, you know, just the intersection of the comedy and the sports thing. It seems like a no brainer. Like there's a fucking audience. Like,
yeah, of course. Well, that's why we're doing.
Everyone who's
podcast.
Not me watches sports. So and Jonah.
Right.
So I feel like there's a.
That's the goal though with Cheap Seats, and now it's the goal with our podcast Sklarbro Country, which we do every week. But the goal of that is to say, how can we make this funny for people who don't like sports? And that's our goal every time.
I mean, but who wouldn't think it's funny to hear a story of a female Australian golfer who gets bit by a 6-foot snake in the middle of an LPGA tournament and then finishes the tournament and like does well on the last two holes? That to me, then you gotta ask yourself,
is this like a Spider-Man situation where she was now like, was it radioactive snake?
Is the venom performance enhancing?
Is
she a superhero now?
When are they gonna check for performance enhancing snakes?
I don't know.
Right? Yeah. Finally we shine a light on that. But to me I was like, wait a minute.
Then it goes into a whole comic book discussion about like that moment in the early stages of any comic book superhero who is sort of their exposure to whatever it is that makes them who they are. And like breaking that down and equating those two things suddenly becomes relatable to other people.
Did
she travels with a snake and she has to get bitten before.
She gets sad like Jake the Snake Roberts later in her career.
She's now watching other people get bit by snakes.
It used to be enough for her to get bit by a snake with a couple
and now,
of
people. Now there's a really elderly snake in bed next to her who just doesn't give a shit about it anymore. And she's like, that's how it used to be.
You used to care. Why do we always fight on
vacation? Bite my leg. I'm tired.
Bite it!
It takes its fangs out, its dentures, puts it on the nightstand.
Or are we even worse?
As a night guard, all the fangs. My jaw's locking. I'm having trouble.
I don't want to grind my fangs.
I don't want to click in the morning. I don't want to grind my fangs. It's hard enough for me to bite your leg as it is.
They're in therapy. It's just so hard. Like, I just don't want to bite the same person like all these years.
It's hard for you.
It is. I feel like it's expected of me, and I don't like that responsibility.
Well, you know, you used to be okay with it. You used to be able to get up for it. This is good. This is good.
This is really good. I like what you guys are doing.
You used to wax your legs, and they were more pleasurable to bite.
When was the last time you shed your skin? I'm sorry.
Stress. I'm worried about being on the LPGA tour and winning enough money so that we can stay in hotels that you like. You want me to stop doing that? I'll shave my legs all the time so I don't have to do that.
Yeah, right. I'll stop taking chipping lessons so that you can
deep into that discussion. So again, it's those types of stories. Those types of stories which like, but who, you know, that has nothing to do with your knowledge of, you know, the Boston Red Sox, which I know Matt's are very,
let's go back to Apartment 2F, which was, that's when I first met you guys. You guys did this show on,
we both were in the MTV universe.
On MTV. We did a photo shoot together for, we did this Lee Jeans photo shoot that MTV was doing a sponsorship for.
For Details magazine, I believe.
It was a bunch of them, and Details was one of them.
We shot it in Tompkins Square Park.
Griffith
Park.
We
shot ours in Griffith Park.
Oh yeah.
There was a big carousel there.
We shot ours in Washington.
And that carousel, it's so funny. That carousel, I now take my daughters to like go on that.
Do they
carousel.
Recognize it from the Lee Jeans photos?
They do. Yeah. They're like, weird. Wow.
They have some sort of cellular memory.
The picture is just wallpaper in his house.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was you guys. And
it's
then,
like a True Blood moment where like they'll like see like just weird like shots of the jeans on people like through my eyes.
In the one with, my mind is totally blanking.
Yes, in that one.
Vampire movie with Kate Beckinsale.
Underworld.
It's like an underworld. Like, the memories are in the blood.
Yeah, that's right. The memories are in the blood.
Which is a great way to relate to a 5 and 3 year old.
They love that.
Sweetie. I'm amazed like how that.
Memories are in the blood,
finish
kids.
Your blood. That's where the memories live.
Memories are in the blood.
It was Apartment 2F and then Austin's Story. So yeah. Kramer and Chip Hopenlohrhouse were there. And then Oddville too, which
Oddville,
was another
those
great
guys were great Oddville, too. Yeah.
But great guys. And then Apartment 2F was you guys and Zach Galifianakis.
And then Showalter again.
Showalter again.
And Rayborn and Matt Price. Jay Nash did a little thing on it. But I mean, when you think of all the people who were on that
Stephen
show.
Colbert was
in the first episode. Amy Poehler, Matt Besser, I mean, UCB for their first.
So you really launched a lot of careers.
I would not say we launched it. We were lucky enough to have those people on. But Patton did stand-up. Greg Barrett did stand-up. Jim Norton did stand-up. Arch Barker did stand-up on the show.
Patrice O'Neill.
This was like 96?
97.
Bill
Burr. It was a really fun show.
I think of all the people, and we're friends with a lot of those people now to this point, and it was great. It's one of the things where we're like, oh, man, not that we've gotten that much better, but you look back at our acting and we're like, ooh, we were so green and it was just so...
Yeah, but that's what's fun about being in the business for a long time is that you start to... I'm sure I've said this a million times on the podcast, so I apologize if I'm repetitive, but I think it's always great to see people that you all started around the same time and you watch which directions people go and sort of what their thing ends up being, and then you can see, like... You know, Zach has clearly popped now, and Patton's doing a big movie, and it's just so fun to watch the rest of the world catch on. They're like, yes, this is what I. You're finally in on this secret that we knew for a decade before anyone started realizing.
We were just talking about it today. We were working at a place in L.A., like this hotel lobby, where the guy who owns the hotel is someone we know, is a friend of ours, and he was...
Were you doing a stand-up set there?
Yeah, we were doing a midday lunch stand-up set.
like a nooner at a college.
Like at a college. They'll just put you anywhere.
Comedy works anywhere.
Outdoors in the quad.
So you're in the hotel lobby.
So we're just talking to this guy, and we were talking about comedy, and we were talking about Zach in particular, about how, you know, for years, like he would,
Like, I cannot remember a set that he's done where he's ever, like, struggled or, like, was like, I'm just off my game tonight. He always killed it and was always funny every single time. Crowds loved him. And now, I think recently, we were on a show at UCB with him, Comedy Death Ray, and it was after The Hangover, and he wasn't announced, but he showed up to show a new...
People lost their minds.
A new Between Two Ferns. People lost their shit. I've never seen... anything like that. It reminded me of the book, the book about Second City, you know, the oral history book, where they talked about when Belushi first came back after doing Saturday Night Live and how he walked into the space and people, like, were screaming like that the Beatles had shown up or like they were getting their necks slit. Like, it was an insane moment. It felt exactly like that.
But then the best part about Zach is that, and I'm sure Belushi did it too, but Zach then delivered hilarious brand new material that he had just written on stage. So it was not like, again, proving why he is deserving of all of that.
Yeah.
And I think many, there are so many people.
I mean, it's not to knock, and I'm not knocking this guy, but his rise was kind of meteoric in that way. Was like a guy like Tom Green, who, you know, suddenly just became huge. Like, he had his show was on a few episodes, and then he did Letterman, and then he was on the cover of Rolling Stone, and then he was doing his movie, and it was like, whoa, who is he? Where did he come from? Has he put in the years? I don't know. And then it just dropped off. Like, you with Zach, you're like, oh, he's been doing this for years and years and years, and that's
years, years. Zach, I you know, not to start putting people into boxes and labeling them, but just kind of watching Zach and something recently, I was like, he might be the Bill Murray of our generation in the sense that he clearly can act.
Yeah, no, he's
like great. I think Zach will end up winning an Oscar sometime within the next 20 years if he doesn't, because he's genuinely uncomfortable, I think, being a famous person.
Yeah, totally, he does not like
and
that.
So unless he just decides to quit and just retreat to his farm in
North Carolina.
Then
maybe.
Well, do you like it? I mean, people probably recognize you when you go out in the world.
Well, yeah.
I mean, how does it feel? Are you?
They don't recognize. I mean, like, I'm not. You know, I'm not on Zach level, so it's not. I don't get. You know, I do get recognized. Yeah, I do, but it's not crazy. Like, right. I don't feel like
it's like the
God moment. Damn it, I can't live my life.
think about when you're at Comic-Con and you're getting recognized.
Yeah, it does kind because of bug you.
San Diego Comic-Con?
Yeah,
we Comic-Con.
Comic-Con.
Where the Ruskies go to talk about Cold War spy.
Well, I saw Yakov Smirnoff at Comic-Con.
Oh.
He was hilarious.
He was unbelievable. He
because
really,
apparently
what
this country
Comic-Con?
Is very
in
different
Soviet
from
Russia, his Soviet Russia. Con is you.
But yeah, I mean,
we get it every once in a while. We get it enough to where it actually feels good, to be honest. Like, it's not intrusive in our lives, and genuinely, if someone's coming up to us, they actually
they know
are
what
a
we've
fan.
Done, and they're fans.
Yeah,
so
and they're
like,
and they're
hey,
nice.
What do you want? What
they're
do you,
nice.
That is the worst. Is
I do
like, hey,
I do get that
what do you
sometimes.
Want? Hey, what do I
what do like, I know you from?
It's
I
like in the
know.
Scene in Annie Hall
when he shows
yes.
up. He's not at the theater yet.
Where I know you? You on TV? You on TV? He's like. No, he's like, no. He's like, he's on TV. He's Alvy Singer. Hey, Alvy Singer.
And then the best line is the other guy's like, who?
Yeah.
Who's Alvy Singer? This guy, Alvy Singer.
It's that. Yes.
Here's one that I love is someone kind of comes up and they just already seem sort of contentious. And they're like, hey, my friend's a little shy, but he says you're on a show, but I don't fucking watch television.
Exactly.
I don't know. Well, what do you do? Why am I supposed to know you? Like, they get in your face about it. You're like,
why am I supposed to
know? I don't know.
Why were you presented in my field of vision? What? I now gotta deal with this.
I gotta deal with
why
you.
Did you make me come up to you?
Why am I an Italian stereotype?
Hey.
Oh! What was Hedberg?
Luxury problems.
Yeah, the Hedberg. Mitch Hedberg had a phenomenal joke about somebody's like, I saw you on
TV last night, and then didn't assign a value to it, like positive.
He's like, I don't know what to do with that. I have no idea what to do with this. So I turn in the Hedbergian style. It's so brilliant. He's like, I turned my head away, and then I looked back at him, and it's like, hey man, I saw you at the airport. And you were good.
so great.
That encapsulates the whole thing, you know, it perfectly. But I mean, I do feel lucky that people do recognize some of the stuff we did and we've done. And I have to say, like the other night we did Doug Benson's show, the Doug Benson Interruption,
yeah.
We'll be on this Friday. I don't know when this is going to be.
This will not go up before it's on. Okay. But it'll repeat. It'll I mean, repeat, the show will sure. repeat.
Yeah.
Highest rated Benson Interruption. We'll say that now.
Yes. Let's
make it the highest. The show that changed the way comedy is done.
Changed the way comedy is done at midnight on Friday night.
I did one of them and it was fucking awesome. So yes. much fun. Did you have fun?
Yeah,
so
tell me why you liked it because I want to hear.
I'll tell you exactly why, because Doug had the presence of mind to tell them, like, don't just bring in an audience of yes. random people. Yep. You bring in comedy nerds who know what they're coming to see. Mm-hmm.
Through his Twitter.
Through his Twitter, you know. Like, and so people showed up. They were cool. It was like we're performing for the people that you would want to perform, you know. Like,
absolutely.
It was just the right audience. The set was great. Doug was great. I had so much fun.
So did you done stand-up on TV, little sets on, like Conan or that kind of stuff?
No, I've done... I did a Premium Blend, and I did the John Oliver show last year. I did a couple episodes of that, and you know,
yeah, this probably was way better than all of the things that you than all those other shows. Or no,
it was well, it was different. It was fun in a different way. The John Oliver shows were shot in New York.
Yeah, right. That's great.
That was super fun. They're all just fun in a different way.
I thought this was for us our best, and we've done two half hour specials on Comedy Central. This was. The thing we did with Doug was our best set of TV comedy.
Well, your act is almost a nonstop interruption.
We're interrupting each other. Yeah, and then he interrupted us. He kind of backed off and let us do our things, and then picked his points to come in and always made it better, always made it funnier. But when you go to do a TV show, it's very... First of all, you're super nervous because you're like, I only get one crack at this. Like, at any time, if it's a live one, at any time, this is the way I feel. Like, I remember the first time we did Conan, or the one time we did Conan, I forgot the opening line of what we were supposed to do. And in the you see it, and I turned to Randy at like the top of the thing, and he just picked it up. Thank God, or else if it was just me, I would have been screwed out there. Because it's so nerve-wracking, because you're thinking, okay, this is going to go out to everybody.
And you're standing right behind the curtain, and then this one in New York in 97, we did Conan, but like you're standing behind the curtain, and then they're like, okay, you're going to go out there. They tell you all these things that you have to remember right before you're about to go on. And we did Kilborn a couple times, same thing. And I always felt like the material we had maybe... We hadn't worked out long enough before we got up to mm-hmm. then do it on TV.
But I think it's more of I think when you're performing comedy, you're at your best when you're totally uninhibited and you're at your loosest.
Yeah.
I think that's when you feel the most comfortable as a person, that's when I think you do, at least when we do our best work on stage. So we were just really relaxed. And then once we got on stage, the fact that Doug was going to be interrupting us meant that we had to keep all of our stuff alive in mm-hmm. a way that we normally don't when you go and do like a TV set. And so we just had to be open to him coming in at any time. And then it ended up being like...
It was so much
fun. We found new moments in our comedy on a TV show. That's never happened.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
It's great. And so we kind of were like, well, we're still evolving. Like, we're still... And you always want to feel that way. But I feel like we are still getting better, still figuring out what it is that we do and how do we do it the best that we can.
And we've been doing comedy for 20 years.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Really 25 years. We're 39 in like a month. And the first time we stepped on stage, we were 14.
Holy wow. crap! So, what do you do on stage at 14?
They were already men.
Steal other people's material.
To be fair,
yes, you steal other people's material, and then you write a little bit yourself. And it's like a mixture of that.
How do you guys write? I mean, do you because your act is very like it's just like rapid fire jokes, and then.
We'll bust into sketches.
Then you go into sketches, and then you're like, I love that the Devil Went Down to Georgia bit is one of my favorites.
Do that anymore,
but you know, you guys come in. Is it just having a sense of because you're twins and you have that super creepy twin connection? Weird cellular twin connection.
Yeah, I never put too much stock in that. Although we do listen to each other really well, and so like we listen for when the other person's coming in, and then you know kind of when to back off, so it feels. Kind of seamless, and the more we do our podcast, the better we get at sort of listening to each other. But
the more you do it, too, the more you do it on stage. Like we basically will come to each other with.
Yesterday, we wrote with a good friend of ours, a great young comedian, and you know him, Hampton Young.
Hampton Young,
really
yeah.
good dude, and a good young comedian. We met him at the Arlington Cinema and Draft House.
Yeah, I've performed with him before. He's a great guy. Yeah.
Great guy, and so we sat and sort of came up and helped him out. With some bits, and he helped us out mm-hmm. with some stuff, and we just kicked ideas around. Really, it was like a wall to bounce stuff off of in a good way. And what we do is we're like, all right, here's a funny nugget of an idea. Now, how can we make that let's just write as much as we can about this and what makes
or
this
talk
funny.
It out.
I mean, like we the thing we were flying the other day and we saw, not to try this bit out, but just to explain this, we were saw like a
in SkyMo magazine. Right, I started looking through SkyMo magazine, and first of all, they were like, there's like, they have surveillance glasses, like glasses that where you can, as it said in the magazine, discreetly record everything you see. like the creepiest things ever. Ray and I were like, if James Bond were, I tweeted this, if James Bond were alive, he'd be shopping in the SkyMall magazine for all of his gadgets.
He would not have a Q anymore. It would just be
Bond,
like,
Bond, it's good. Q. It's good. I don't need you.
I don't need you. I've got, and so again, we saw that, and then we saw like a dog.
An end table.
An end table that is basically doubles as a dog crate. And to
oh
us,
yes, I
like,
saw
you
that.
Know that.
I'm like, that is the creepiest, most hilarious thing ever. Like, who is it targeting, and who are the people who are shopping for it? Who are like shopping for other end tables? And they're like, I like it. It fits our style.
It's mission style. It is
mission
style.
It's great. But can you incarcerate a pet inside? You can't. You can't. Then I don't want it. It doesn't fit. So,
you know what I hate when I put my drink on a table and it's not jangling.
It's not jostling. It's not jostling. I wish I went to, you know. So anyway,
Bond, why do you have a planter that also is a cat box? Well, it's a SkyMall Q.
SkyMall Q. Yeah, it's that.
That was my Roger Moore.
It was great. It was beautiful. So. But like we start with that idea, saw the picture, that's weird, and then we just start talking it, improvising.
And then we're like, well, how can we then make it more of, like, so that's the premise, but then how can we make it more of, to include the two of us, who are we in this bit? Like,
do you write it down with your hands, or do you start spitting it out and act it out and then jump in on each other?
I think we type it up on the computer just so we have it, so we don't forget. That's the worst part, is like when we come up with something and we're riffing, and then we're like, what did we say?
No matter how awesome of an idea you think you have, and of course I'll never forget this, you will forget it in 2 minutes.
You will forget it. So we
kind of we do it in outline form. We always write our bits in like the form of an outline.
Like on Microsoft Word or something?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, really. And then
Bank Street Writer. Oh, snap.
And then we but outline also then allows us to see like what are the directions that it goes.
Okay.
Outlining. Like here's the idea, and then here's the sub thing, and this is kind of connected to this. And so we write it out.
Mind mapping.
It's
mind
right. Mapping. And then we put it up on stage, and then that really dictates to us like, okay, well this is,
that didn't work, or that something in there is right.
Like we had that idea that I just was like watching on TV, and I just saw like somebody wearing a sombrero, and I was just like, God, that's so like racist. Like, just like, you know, the guy that's, all right, that's the hat he chose, but it's like, could there be a more racist hat ever? And so we were like, well, what's funny about it? That's funny to us. And then who are we in this? How can we make this a Sklar Brothers like bit? And so we then were like, it was clearly not invented by Mexican people. It was probably invented by dudes who worked at a racist hat company, just kicking ideas around. And then we become the two white guy who are pitching the ideas
of the racist hat. And so that's how that bit became that bit. And then we did that. We just recently came up with that, and we did it the other night on the Benson Show.
Where do you workshop? Where do you workshop stuff now? Do you workshop stuff on the road, or do you just like...
The road is a great place to workshop stuff for, in terms of like...
Especially, the road is a great place to take like a 2 minute bit and make it a 4 minute bit, mm-hmm. to write extra tags and find new directions and find other but for brand new bits we tend
to
do. I
love going up in LA. There was like a bunch of
Tiger Lily is a show.
Tiger Lily is a fun show. There's UCB. Sean Conroy, who is a UCB demigod and one of the most amazing improvisers you will ever see. Conroy put up a show at UCB last week called I can't remember what it was called. The Incubator.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's called The Incubator.
We were only allowed to bring half.
You only can do stuff you've never done before.
Love it. I love that.
And
I want to do it.
And the audience knew that was
Conroy,
the premise.
If you're listening.
And I did it. And honestly, it was one of the best comedy things I've done recently.
Did you get to do bits out of it?
Yes. I mean, listen, here's the thing. 70% of what I did just died.
But sure. 30%
but 30% worked.
That's three new
and
minutes.
That made me so happy.
It's amazing.
I knew the numbers would be about
that. You
know
it's going to be.
But what's crazy is like, I remember like at the beginning of a special thing when like there was a ton of like people getting on message boards.
Oh yeah, the special thing was the comedy message boards where all the comedy nerds gravitated to like 5 or 6 years ago.
And they still go to that site. It's a cool site, but I think like most of the reviewing of the shows has kind of chilled out a little bit.
They used to review joke by joke.
Joke by joke of everyone's set.
Yeah, now people just record your set with an iPhone and put it on YouTube.
Yay!
No, the bad part about the reviewing is that like well, someone coming up and doing CDR for their first time.
They're going to do their best stuff that they've ever done, and they're going to... I remember these guys came in, like, this guitar group from Australia came in and, like, blew the doors off. You were there that night. They, like, blew the doors off with, like, stuff that was pretty funny, but, like, I was like, it's a little straightforward, but it's funny and it's cool, and it's music, which is always really entertaining and cool, but... they'd never done the show before, so they're doing like their best three songs.
Isn't
that
fun to go to a new place and then you're like, I get to open up the trunk and not feel guilty about doing the classics.
You know we're gonna destroy. Yeah. And then Randy and I are coming to stage right after that, and we did fine. I was happy with the set.
Again, newer stuff.
But we did a lot of new stuff. Some stuff we'd never said before ever on stage, and then maybe one or two older things that we knew would work. But like that was how we put together our set. And I remember like someone reviewed it like they had an up and down set compared.
Yeah,
to
that used to
We did.
It was one of the reasons why I stopped doing Death Ray. There were periods where I was doing it a lot.
Yes.
And I always felt like, I mean, like really sometimes every week for, you know, a stretch.
Yeah.
And so every time I went up, I always felt like I have to do like 70% new material.
And so you're on the limb. You're out
always
on the
edge. Always on the limb. And then people are going up and, you know, and like you said, doing that kind of thing. And then I just started to feel self-conscious about it. Like, because you can't explain. No, guys, I am using this space to workshop. Exactly. I'm not doing my A stuff.
I'm on the tippy edge of my material, and that's you're using it for a different purpose. And so, I mean, if we can work out new material at Comedy Death Ray, we will always take that opportunity. But of course, sandwiched in between other stuff that we know has worked in other venues, you kind of work it in other venues and then bring it to Comedy Death Ray, or you're working on the road and you're like, oh, this is a bit that we sort of, and then you bring it to like, that's the way we kind of view that show. Mm-hmm. But also, just saw Paul
Crash
Scheer.
Test.
Crash Test.
Oh, Crash Test is a great show.
Great
too.
Show on Monday nights in New York, but they're bringing it back. It's now.
It's like an 11 o'clock show.
That was like Aziz's show way back in the day in New York.
It was.
Aziz and Leo Allen was on that show.
Yeah, Leo Allen hosted. It was so funny.
I mean, what's crazy about
that show? I mean, a great story about that show is that we went out to record our second half hour special for Comedy Central, and we're like, I wonder where we can put it up before we go do it. So we got in on Monday afternoon, and we thought, or Monday night. In New York, and we're taping on a Wednesday.
And I emailed Jeremy Levenbach, who books that show in New York. Great guy, really nice guy, and a big comedy fan, and gets it. And he said, "Yeah, of course, you guys come down, do the show, of course." And so we were thrilled, and we show up, and like, I mean, this is a Monday night, like at 11:45, and it's like. Completely packed,
wall to wall,
three deep, like
behind the seats.
Behind the seats, the people are like standing, like three people deep, and it was Leo hosted. Andrea wrote. Sean Patton did a set.
Uh-huh,
who you remind me of him a little bit. Sean Patton, really funny comedian. Andrea Rosen, Todd Barry. Doug Benson and
Man, what are you guys doing?
Todd Barry and Doug Benson, or Doug Benson and Sarah Silverman went up. Then Colin Quinn went up. Then we closed the show, and we're like, all right. Normally in that scenario, that's a pretty daunting list of people to follow. But we were like, I think we're going to be okay. We know what we're doing. We haven't been here in a while, and it was the one of the best sets of comedy we've ever had. Every moment was getting the laughs we wanted to, and it was just perfect. And so
it was one of those like electric. Sets where mm-hmm. you go that this doesn't happen. This happens once every year or two. I mean, this is
I don't know the last time Colin's seen us perform, and I don't even know the last time that Sarah's seen us perform. But like, they came in and watched, and we were just, you know, there are peers that we look up to, and they're a little bit ahead of us in the sort of the comedy genealogy of it. So it was really nice that they came in and saw that set. So we were feeling great.
I don't think genealogy is the right word there.
Yeah.
But I'm just gonna say that.
It's comedy. I'll accept it.
Okay,
comedy
timeline.
Comedy timeline.
I would say think of it like a class.
Okay.
They're the scene. They're the class
above.
They're
more like juniors and we're sophomores.
Syllabus?
No, not syllabus. Anyway, so two nights later we do our special, and then we recorded at John Jay College, and it was a different, very different audience that they brought in for this thing, and moments and bits and things that got such good laughs and such good response like two nights before were not getting it there. And I was really nervous. We hadn't seen our special. I was so nervous that like that was going to show on our
face. The disappointment would just like be there on our face. Like,
why are they so mad?
And, yeah. You know, why
because
they not
we
having
knew
fun?
What it had done two nights before. It kind of spoiled us in that way. But you know, sometimes in the beauty of this of performing and whatnot is sometimes.
But that's what's kind of cool. I feel like that's a story that we'll always have for ourselves, which is like we're even talking about this, like with cell phones, like you were saying, with people recording stuff. Like take for example the Joe Rogan Carlos Mencia showdown.
Yeah.
Like, now it was up on the internet and everyone was watching it. And millions of people saw it. And then you can decide, well, wow, you know, wow, Rogan really hammered him. Or, wow, fans of Mencia would be like, he stood his ground and all that stuff. But if it was the olden days, like, before all that stuff, it would just become this great legendary story that everyone would pass down.
And then Rogan picked him up and threw him into the audience.
Scratched his balls and then he knifed him. I mean, like, it would get bigger and it would get crazier, and some people who weren't there would tell it like they were there and all that stuff, and it would just become this
great... But now it's like,
you just go and look at it.
Oh, that thing that's on YouTube.
Click on it and there it is. Yeah. It's like the other day I was so mad, I just got in the mail a ticket for, like, making a right turn on red, and this, you could make a right turn on red, but I apparently didn't come to a complete stop when I was doing it. But I looked on the pictures that was sent to me in the mail, and there I was. There was a red light. There was no sign saying you can't make the right turn, and my signal was on. I wasn't sure if my signal was on, so I called him up, and I'm like all pissed off because it's like $475. It was ridiculous. Moving violation. I gotta go to comedy court. You know, do the comedy driving class that the improv gives, which is so not.
Who does
funny.
It? Do you know who?
If you've done that, if you've ever gotten a ticket, a moving violation, you go to the improv, does the thing. You can do it online or whatever, but I gotta do that. It's just like such a pain in the ass. So I called up and I'm like, you know, what the. You know, I have in my hand the evidence of this and this, and I made, but there is no sign on there. And the woman, like, let me rant it all out. I was like, I hate her, but, like, I secretly admire her. I hated her so much for, like, just letting me rant it all out and be like, are you kidding me? $475, you're raping me for this. And she was like, well, you could go online and check the video because you're supposed to come to a complete spot. I was like, video? No! Video of me not doing that, and I'm like, I'm busted. So now I'm still mad. I've got all the, like, bravado of being really mad.
And you're wrong.
And I'm wrong. So I'm like, how do I channel all that anger?
But it is, like, true. But it is true.
You do like rednecks do and take it out on minorities.
That's right.
Or your wife.
Or your wife or your kid.
Hey, women are a minority in some cases.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
And if your wife is a minority, you can really
double hit that thing.
Backhand and forehand. Backhand and forehand.
And stay down.
Double word score on that.
But
wife,
I just was,
dude,
like, so mad. I was like, so where do I take that class?
You know, what you want to do is you're trying to backpedal in a way that where you want her to think, like, that's just how you communicate all the time. Right. Oh, do I sound mad right now? No, I'm not mad.
Thanks a lot.
I want you to have a nice day.
You have a good day, too.
That's like that sarcastic David Foley character. No, this is just how I talk.
Right.
This is the worst. I got in an argument once with a city worker because the garbage men destroyed one of our trash cans. Mm-hmm. And I guess it was an oversized trash bin, and there are two sizes, and I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, if you want the same size bin, it's going to cost you an extra, you know, like $30 a month or something. I'm like, yeah, but I wasn't paying that before. And
now I have to.
And you guys broke it. And so now, and it got to such a point where I said something which didn't make any sense, and then she said something that made even less sense. But I said, "You have a logic cube missing." I don't even know what a logic cube is,
and how would I know it was missing?
Her response. The city workers, this is me. No, you have a logic tube missing. So it turned into a childhood taunt back in my face, but it turned from logic cube to logic tube. Which,
and
to be
like,
honest,
wait a minute,
which
wait
is
a minute.
Way worse,
there
by the
no
way.
Sexing.
That is so much worse to
but
be accused of not having
then
a logic tube.
I start thinking
tube.
About the technology. I'm like, well, but you know, if she's thinking about early
like
60s technology,
runs, yeah,
like
yeah.
There were, you know,
stereo,
there were vacuum tubes.
Stereos, like
yeah, there were tubes, you know, analog technology. Like she might have been, but it was just.
Tenacious D says, you got to get someone on the tube technology.
I just started laughing and I was like, I'll just take the smaller can. Like it was totally
fine. Give me a smaller can. I'll work with it.
But my point was that video has ruined the ability to
tell a great story.
To have a legend grow. And for us, now connected to that special for us is like this night that was recorded by no one nowhere, but we know in our minds that was the special for us that Monday night.
You just reminded me of a very special story about how, and this When I tell you the name of the other player who's involved in this, I think you're all going to be very impressed. 10 years ago, I was flying back from some MTV thing, And I was sitting next to Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Hello.
He did not have a heart attack.
No, no.
He did not.
No, but I imagine Jean-Claude Van Damme buys three seats and just does the splits. Because he can. Like, if I could do that, dunking a basketball, that's all I would do. I would install basketball hoops everywhere around my house. Just be like, oh, you want me to do that? Because I can. Just Van Damme.
Sir, do you want to sit in regular? He just doesn't respond. We've been trying the whole time. He's in some type of meditative trance.
Both feet are on the armrest.
Sir, could you put a shirt on? Could you please put a shirt on?
Could you take the oil off?
When you can fly oiled up. You can't do that anymore.
He was great in the Expendables since 9-1-1.
He was great in JCVD.
I'm kidding. He wasn't this oiled on the way out to Louisville.
So we're flying over a wicked storm. And if you've never flown over a lightning storm before, it is one of the most beautiful things you will ever see in your life.
Yeah.
Because watching a cloud from above, it looks like something out of Harry Potter, where it's just like this ball of clouds, and then all this lightning is just whipping through the cloud.
It's awesome.
It's how they always animate your brain working.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
His brain's working.
I guess Jesus was thinking about something.
Sure was.
In the clouds.
It's all electricity.
And
it's so intelligently designed. is what you're trying to say. Which, by the way, that was my... I wanted to pitch a sitcom called Intelligently Designing Women, where it was just a bunch of sassy Southern women teaching creationism to a bunch of dinosaurs.
That's hilarious. Well, Mike Furman and I, we did a country song called Naturally Selected, which is all about the breakup of... But where it's a country love song split between Jesus and Darwin.
I'm
afraid to put it online because I just don't want to get fucking...
There was a slideshow with it, right?
We shot a whole video for it.
You shot a video. Maybe that's the video.
We shot a whole video for it.
All right, so Van Damme.
So we're flying over this wicked lightning storm and I just kind of turn and I'm like, this is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen, and it pains me that I cannot take the memory of this and place it into someone else's head so they can see how incredible this is. And just all sage-like. He might as well have been doing the splits on the seats.
Uh-huh.
He was like, but no, because this experience is yours and is yours alone. And you wouldn't want to give it to somebody else. This is a gift that has been given to you. And I was like,
Van Damme!
Oh my God.
You just did some serious Van Damme to my heart.
Van Damme.
Damn you, Belgium!
Exactly why the only VHS in my house is a letterbox copy of Time Cop.
Yep.
There it is.
Why's he got to go back in time? Because that experience was for those people. Yeah, go back.
He's not practicing.
Why don't you follow your own advice, Time Cop?
Don't confuse the art with the artist.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. That's what
he
I was doing
a mental splits right there.
And I was so blown away that I was like, I just got fucking sensei schooled by... By Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Why didn't you spit in the face of Van Damme by telling us that story?
Wasn't that awesome?
In that one moment, did you understand, like, all right, I understand, like, how, you really understood how much he got laid. You can abstractly understand that it happened, but in that moment, you're like, you really got laid.
I let him butt fuck me in the laboratory. If that is anything.
I think you have to at that point.
Yeah, you don't have a choice. Yeah.
That's required. At that game, literally, he might as well have just finished that and been like, after you.
The craziest part, you loved it.
So, to
sort of echo what you were saying, of course. The internet has ruined a lot of things exactly for that reason.
But that being the story and the lore, because, again, a lot of it is, and we've been reading a bunch of books about comedy. There's a great book, I'm Dying Up Here, which was written by Bill Knotelator, I want to say. It's a really weird long last name, but he was...
Sounds like a 30s contraption.
Yeah, it is.
The Knotelator, kids.
Yeah. But he was the LA Times beat writer for a comedy in the 70s.
And then there was the strike of...
There was a beat writer for comedy?
Yeah, his beat was comedy. Because it became this kind of crazy... It was rock and roll back then.
Well, also, like, think about... I mean, it kind of was the AST, I guess, of his time. There was no, like, people weren't going online to check stuff. It's like you had to sort of take the alternative stuff and put it into some sort
God,
of a,
can you imagine crushing at the Comedy Store in, like, 76?
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, you would have done it in front of Letterman and Pryor and...
But all those guys. But you just reading the stories of those people, and they all feel like it's like folklore almost. You're hearing the stories of how they would all... You know, it's so funny. Chelsea Peretti. We had a set of well, you were on that show, right?
No, he didn't show up.
Did not show up. That's right.
Way to bring that up.
We're trying to get Jonah to learn how to use iCal.
Jonah was invited and he chose not to come.
I didn't choose.
Oh, that's
what
the story where you told where you were like, I was supposed to open for the Sklars and I forgot.
And I saw them the night before. They were on my show.
And we told them about it. By the way, your show is another great show that we took.
Oh, the Meltdown.
Meltdown show is a great show.
Great show.
Great audiences and a lot of fun in a really cool space.
People that show up.
But we, but anyway, so she was on. Chelsea Peretti is, you know, someone who we've been friends with, but I hadn't actually seen a full set of her comedy, and she went on before us, and I
in Jonah's slot.
She went on right before us, and she was amazing. I love her comedy so much, and I loved what she did on it. Like she
took it to so many different levels, and it felt so free and improvisational. Well, while at the same time being so written,
she wrote
so
many good jokes, and it was like, I was like, because you read a lot about Elaine Boozler back in the day, kind of busting in and doing it where the guys did it, and she didn't care and did a different type of comedy. And you can kind of go back and see it a little bit, although she sort of changed through the 80s and whatnot, but. I was like, this must be what they were kind of talking about, because I really felt like she was, it was only a set that a woman could do. It was only a set that, like, she could do, and yet it was not exclusive to, it didn't make me feel bad because I was a dude watching it, and it just was funny, flat out funny on all levels. It's kind of the way I feel when I watch Sarah perform, but I was like, you know, this was just, it was so eye-opening and amazing, and I was like, this is incredible. This must be what it was like when you saw somebody who was
great
in that way. I was blown away.
Well, I was at Laughing Skull in Atlanta, and they have started doing these shows. Some guy basically took over an abandoned church in Atlanta and has turned it, he's taken every space in this old church and put some sort of a performance space in it.
Wow.
And he's like do improv there and that sort of thing. It's called Relapse. And it was, and so they had said, you know, after your two shows on Saturday, do you want to do this 1 a.m. show at Relapse? And it's where all the comedy nerds, you know, it was the first, they had done a few, but this was the first one that I think they were going to start doing it regularly.
Got it.
And so, you know, we're in the basement of this old church that they are still in the process of refurbishing, and it was, there's this really great Atlanta comic named Andy Sanford who was really hilarious, and then Rory Scovel happened to be in town.
Oh, nice.
And he was fucking awesome. Yeah. And I think he so just funny. Fucked around the whole time, but he did that thing where, you know, his stuff was very acty outy and absurd. And he did that thing that like that Paul F does that I love so much, which is they dive so fucking far into a scene where they start taking right turns with just little bits of information and they make that the focus of the scene. And it really felt like, oh my God, it's so much fun to be a part of this and then watch, because club comedy is one thing. But then, and Laughing Skull is more on the alternative side of clubs.
Right. That's hardly.
But at the same time, it's so much fun to watch people do the most fearless, experimental shit imaginable.
And it should be what we all do when we get to where we get to. You know what I mean? Like, we should have no fear, and we should be doing that.
Which is what but I that's was where saying. People get more fear because those people don't want to lose their success.
Sure. Well, what I say is, and that's why this set the other night, not to bring it back, the other night on Doug's show was so wonderful in that we were as fearless as I think we've been in a long time.
Have you been doing a lot of road work, you say?
Yeah, we did San Francisco
and Portland, and then us a little
that
bit
helps
more.
So that much. Helps. That really helps so much to, like, once you are so comfortable with the words and the beats, and
you
then
can have fun with it.
Then you can go up and have fun with it, because that's your safety net, is that you know what you're doing.
Exactly.
You could always come back to that. You can go out farther because you know you're safe.
Yeah, when we act out, when we do our comedy, it's usually, again, like, whereas...
This is where we're kind of going.
Where one person will do, you know, a comedian will bring up a premise and then deliver, like, different examples to illustrate the point.
Or maybe even act it out.
We
that's really what Drew Carey says. Drew Carey always says, like, that's a comedy staple. You lay out a premise and then act it out.
And act it out. But for us, we have the ability to actually go into a scene and really get into who these people are.
Like the Sleeping Beauty bit, like which is one of my favorite bits.
Thank you.
The Snow White bit.
I mean,
again, which has grown so much even since you've seen it.
Well, I remember even you guys were still riffing on it and playing with it in Arlington when we went out to D.C. Yeah. It's like you guys, it's like we've been thinking, because like, you know, you were thinking about that story.
Snow White, just the happily, they live happily ever after being the laziest third act in history. Like, no way. And now we're kind of like, well, we're married, and it really has turned into so much more about like, you can live with, you can learn to live with someone and all of their idiosyncrasies. Like,
you, or you could go to therapy and understand why you made the life choice of that partner to share your life with.
And then make peace with that decision.
But you'll never live happily ever
after. That's like, not, that won't happen. So that's where it starts. And then we're like, especially the way these two met. And so the bit is that we then go into, you know, our impression of Snow White and her husband 8 months after they've been married. And they're just having a conversation at the breakfast table. And so for us, it's like, it feels almost like a Newhart bit, or, you know.
It's a Newhart bit, but you get the other side.
Yes. Right.
Newhart would always be, and what was so funny is to anticipate what the other person was saying. And I love that about that. But this is like, or a Nichols and May thing where you're like jumping into what.
Where it's about all that stuff and we set up all that stuff. But I think, like the Drew Carey thing, what our alternative sensibilities in us say is, fine, we'll give you the setup and we'll act it out, but we're going to act out things that you didn't expect to happen out of that setup.
So then it really becomes about them at the breakfast
and
table.
He's like, one, the
husband is like making veggie sausage and he's like really focused on what he's doing.
But he's using the veggie sausage as a way not to really have the discussion that she wants to have. So he's talking about whether he should turn it from low to medium low.
Forget about the sausage.
Just maybe it should be on medium. You know what? I don't know how long we're going to be talking here. I don't want to waste these.
I just want to have a type of marriage where we can, you know. And so like it becomes that. And it's, we leave that loose enough so that we're on our toes. And then when we're on doing those shows, like
we're improvising.
Anything can happen. And like in Portland, there were just, he was doing some things that were just, again, you never want to bust it on stage ever and just start laughing. But like, I was like, that made me laugh. It was funny. And I tried to then, as that character, laugh in a way that you would laugh nervously as Snow White.
Or be angry that you're laughing.
Yeah, be upset at yourself. I mean, it's just great. It forces you as an actor to kind of in those moments. And so for us, what we found, and I don't know if it's because of our podcast or it's just because of the amount of stuff that we've done that's out there now, I feel like, and the clubs are going to, the audiences are willing to go with us longer and on our bits.
Yeah, have you found that like when you went out to laugh, there were like Nerdist fans were there and people were
Yes. And you know, and it was so much fun. Like nerds are starting to show up. Like the nerds that I want, like the people who listen to the podcast and people, like people that I would genuinely hang out with, are starting to show up to the shows. And all the shows at Laughing Skull were full, but the late show Thursday night, for whatever reason, 10 people showed up to the late show.
Yeah.
And so my first instinct was, what the fuck? I'm not where I want to be yet. I can't believe I can't sell out this room. Right. This, you know, like,
yeah,
despite the fact the rest of the shows end up being fine. And my first instinct was to get all mad. And then I realized, like, well, it's not the audience's fault.
These guys showed up.
So I used it as, I went out there and I started talking to the crowd. And then I pulled the table up from the audience and just brought each person up one at a time and interviewed them talk show style. Just so we could all get to know each other.
That's hilarious.
And so that took an hour. And then I did, and then I did my act. Right. I did 2 hours, which I've never done before. No. And it ended up being one of the most perfect, fun stage experiences of my life.
That's really cool.
Which, awesome. You know, was
great. It's like,
which could have been like dreadful.
Sure.
If I had a bad attitude about it.
But that's the beauty of, you know, doing what we do and bringing it out there to people and getting around and seeing people. And again, we're finding with our podcast, like, Scarborough fans are like coming out in wearing t-shirts.
How is that going? You know, we talked about this months ago.
Yeah, I talked to you and you said you have to do a podcast. And
of course.
And you honestly, how convicted you were with, you know, because you had only been doing it briefly. This was in the spring, and you guys had only done
it. Yeah, only been a couple months.
Months.
How long have I been saying this?
You've been saying it too. I don't trust you. I don't trust you.
Like, how often are you on TV? No. Tell us what you said.
Hardwick, I called you, and
well,
we talked.
Actually,
it was outside of UCB, I think.
We were at Chelsea.
We were Chelsea Lady.
It was one of the shows where they decided to start splitting you guys up.
Right, and it was just me and you, and I just had the longest conversation with you about it, and you were like, here's why you should do it. And I said, well, there's no money in it, and, you know, we got to make decisions that will help us make money. And you said, do this, and the money will come in other ways, or it won't come, but you'll feel so satisfied by what you're doing, you'll forget about that. And you are 100% right.
I mean, we kind of just started out the gate, and we were lucky enough to have some really good people come on the show and good guests that, like, I think fans were, like, you know, and people who have been on lots of podcasts, but they're like Janine Garofalo, John Hamm, you know, Patton, who was just on, or Birbiglia, or Schwartzen. Like, these are all people that have their audiences that come to it in addition, and that's kind of what we thought. We've got to really sort of dig in at the beginning, and they're all friends of ours, so there's like a real common sort of language in there. But it's been amazing. Like, we'll tell people 3 weeks out, like, hey, we're going to be in Portland, Scarborough Nation, buy your tickets early, and then we'll get to Portland. And, you know, we were always, we'd go into a club and we're like, why aren't we drawing as well as we, you know, we're like, yeah, that's kind of light.
Yeah.
We're like, really? If people knew we were coming, I feel like more people would show up to these shows. And we went in the last couple clubs and they're like, you're drawing better than we've drawn in the last few months. And
that's, I'm great.
Like, that has to be.
I've been hearing that too. And
it has to be a function of the.
It is. Like, the podcast is the best way to connect with people that you want to be performing for, because they will, if they like what you're doing, they will download it and they will listen, and then when they show up at shows, like, everyone, because I always go out and talk to people after shows, yeah, and they always, and it, mm-hmm, people show up more because of the podcast than anything else put together.
That's awesome.
And they are always nice, and I always like talking to them, and they're always like these really cool people. And then you realize that if people listen to you regularly, it's probably because you'd probably get along with them.
That's right.
They like what you have to say.
You're revealing personal stuff, even though we're gagging around here. You're talking about, in that moment, you know, when you saw there were 10 people, like, just even you revealing, like, that you were like, oh man, I'm not where I want to be. Like, even just sharing that part of yourself.
Because a lot of people would look at you and be like, well, Hardwick's doing a show on G4 and he's like doing voices on this and I see him on that and he's doing stand up all over here and he's on TV. What do you mean he's not where he wants to be? But the fact that you have that idea in your head and you just revealed that on your podcast.
Oh, yeah, I recorded that.
Is a telling thing, because
and it is open up people. I think
we all feel that way in many ways. For our fans, like, we'll get tons of emails of like, I'm a grocery bagger, I hate my fucking job, my friend was listening to her iPod, she works at the grocery store with me, and she was cracking up, and I said, what is that? And she said, Scarborough Country. So I downloaded it, and now you get me through the worst part of my day on a Friday. Get me through. Or other people, like, I'm commuting and I listen to you when I commute in, or I'm working out, I hate working out, but it goes by like this because I'm listening to your thing. So what you realize is you are with people in their very personal, and you're in their ear. They're like, you're the very personal. Now, what I would love to do, and this is something that, you know, maybe even through sponsorship of our show, because eventually we're going to have to make money and we're out to try and get sponsors and stuff, but I would love to open it up to where, remember when the Flaming Lips made that album, the Soft...
Zurika.
Soft Bulletin, where they're...
That wasn't the Soft Bulletin. It was a different album.
Zurika is one of the four discs.
The four discs that you had, like, you needed, they were like, music is getting so, like, individual. We want to do it so where people can, like, hang out. And so if you play,
play them all at the same time,
yeah,
right?
And they would, like, they wanted you to surround yourself with different stereos to play all four discs at the same time, and those songs end up swirling around.
And I guess you could be one person with four stereos, but ideally what they wanted was four people to get together and listen to music together. I would love it if people would then start listening to podcast together, be like, you know, the thing that they do before they have people over, and then on Friday night when it drops, like, we'll listen to the podcast together, that's what we'll do, and then we'll have a dinner party.
They might, but I feel like it is a pretty personal experience.
It is, but
and
you
so
never know where it's gonna go, and so, like, it'd be cool to open it up that way.
So great. Are you working with Aukerman, the Earwolf thing?
Yes, yeah. We're on earwolf.com is where Sklar.
Yeah, Aukerman's so smart. He you know, Scott Aukerman is the guy who is Scott Aukerman and BJ Porter were the ones who started Comedy Death Ray, and they were a writing team, and they were for Mr. Show, and Scott does Comedy Death Ray Radio, and he really is smart about, like, pulling, you know, like, creating this network. I mean, I think podcasting is the best medium going.
It's the most exciting time. Him and Jeff Ulrich, who also works with...
Oh, his business partner, Jeff, is a great dude.
They both got it with Earwolf, and they asked us to be the first show to be
so funny, because we were kicking around, well, should we do it on our own? We're like, well, what should we do? I mean, should we just... start doing the podcast. We talked to Fitzsimmons, who has a great podcast.
I talked to you. Yeah. I talked to Matt.
You guys were all like, just do it. So we were about to do it. And then Jeff and Scott approached us and said, would you guys want to do it? We're kind of opening up this network. And we're like, yeah, this is perfect timing.
Great. Well, but I said it was so amazing. It is a golden age, I feel like, for comedy fans, for people who don't live in LA or New York or, you know, in any of those places where a lot of us who do the podcast live. This is a chance for them to see us do new material every week.
every week, a new hour. I mean, it takes us like 6 months to write like a new 20 minutes for our act. Even.
It's a lot. I mean, we're trying to write, you know, trying to literally
Cycle in a new half hour if we can every 9 months. So if we come back to places, then at least like, two-thirds of the show is new for the audience that's there. But like, you know, that's hard to do. We write material for our podcast. And I know this is more of a free-form interview, but like, you know, you're giving them comedy. I listen to your show. It's entertaining. I listen to it while I hike. It's like funny.
Hey, that's nice.
So I do that, and it's like, wow, I get that entertainment from someone I like each week of new material every week.
And I think we're at the beginning cusp of it. I think it's only going to get bigger. I hope it only will get bigger. I mean, like, shows that are getting, like, 20 to 30,000 downloads a week, which is kind of where we're at right now. We've only had about, like, 16 episodes.
That's really great.
So to be where we're at there, and I think it's growing. I think it's kind of
It will, especially with, like, the iTunes suggestion engine. Sure. And then you'll start doing more of that stuff, and it'll be great. And hopefully,
but I think it will grow to, like, where shows like Marin's and yours and hopefully ours and definitely CDR will be at, like, 50 to 75,000. And I know Corolla does his every day and gets 200,000 downloads or whatever he does. But like, for all of us, we know there are people. This and Twitter, I think, are phenomenal tools to kind of identify our fans out there and sort of be like, hey, we're doing this.
I just appreciate that this whole network of people is so supportive, and that we want to go on each other's shows. Yep. We want to help each other. Like, we're all in the same fucking boat. Like, we need to.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that we're all helping each other, I think is so fantastic. We're actually. This will go up before this happens, but like going back to earlier, like because of those Dangerfield specials that always changed my life so much, I decided that I wanted to do like a stand-up special podcast. So we're gonna Jonah help set up with Emily Gordon and Kumail Nanjiani. We're gonna do a. I hate to call it a young comedian special because all these people have been performing for a while.
Sure,
but
you're breaking them to the
comedians you should know. So like Jonah's going to do it, and Kyle Kinane and Matt Bronger, and hopefully Chelsea Peretti, and hopefully Natasha Leggero and Kumail and
Paul Sebas,
and just all these people. You know, that maybe don't haven't had quite the exposure
and
that they deserve. We're going to record it. We're going to do a live comedy show at Meltdown. Everyone will do like it'll be like an old comedy special,
right?
And then we'll put it out as a podcast.
As a podcast, also put it out as a DVD and a CD.
No, if we'll do that. That takes shooting and editing and.
Well, you know.
We'll figure that out. So I will say, awesome. Like, as a if you're in LA on the 15th
you're
of December,
to do it, great.
That's
no,
so
guys,
thank
no,
you
no, already
thank
have
you so
your
much.
Own thing.
Oh, no, that's
you already.
So,
you don't mind.
But the shows.
Love listening to like again talking about podcasts. Like listening to like that'd be something like Carlos Mencia would be like. You want me to do it? I'm just gonna bump Jonah. He doesn't need his time.
He bumps three
Carlos
people.
Did 4 hours.
Comedian special.
So that show's December 15th. If you want to come to the live show, that'll be at Meltdown Comics in Los Angeles, and then. I didn't have time to ask the question that I really wanted to ask, which is, are your cocks identical?
Cock rings identical.
Okay.
Cock rings.
I've had plastic surgery down there.
No, you're not. Are you fraternal? You're fraternal twins.
We're identical.
Well,
identical.
And I will say this. My cock has glasses. Randy's
that's how you
Randy's does not. So,
or a monocle. Wouldn't it have a monocle?
It would have a monocle, but I can't do a contact down there because it's just so hard. I can't.
You can't put it inside of it.
It's too sensitive.
I would say.
Sorry, I ended the podcast with the hackiest joke that could come out of my mouth.
Connected to our cock rings are two tiny keys that whenever we tweet, because we have the same Twitter account, we have Sklar Brothers, you put it in the
plug
thing
the
and then
in
you kind of double.
Sir, turn your key to the right.
It's like a safety deposit box.
But you don't want to lose that.
Or the launch codes.
Launch codes for missiles. Like, we don't want to, I don't want to lose that key. So you put it in the place where you'll kind of always, where you know.
So sklarbrothers.com
At Sklar Brothers is our
Twitter.
That's usually when you can kind of find out what's going on. Sklarbro Country, which is at earwolf.com. If people are going to be up in San Francisco, we're headlining the New Year's show.
Oh, great.
It's a Palace of Fine Arts.
With Nick Thunes on the show and Charlene Yee's on the show. It's a fun show.
That'll be fun.
Great. And then we were talking to Sketchfest about doing a live Sklarbro. We've never done a live Sklarbro, but potentially doing a live Sklarbro up in San Francisco for Sketchfest the last weekend in January.
This could be the year of the podcast up at Sketchfest.
That would be
really
fun.
Cool.
And then do like, I mean, we would love to like try and get, because the San Francisco Giants won the World Series, like get some of these great, and they're great dudes.
Well, I'll tell you something. I only know one person in sports.
Barry Zito.
I'm friends with Barry Zito.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Get him to come on the...
Was he on the roster?
I don't think he was.
No. I don't know.
But he's a very nice guy.
He seems like a great dude and funny and seems like a quirky dude.
Brian Wilson, who's the relief pitcher who grew like basically
from the Beach Boys.
No, yeah, I was gonna say, but he grew a beard like what's his name's beard from Wet Hot American Summer. I mean,
he looks like Chris Maloney.
He looked like Maloney in Wet Hot American Summer if Maloney was trying to like didn't have the time to grow back that beard because of SVU, and so they wanted to do a reunion show and he just put on a fake beard. Yeah, exactly. That's what he looked like, and it was so genius. And he's a very funny guy.
There's actually a scene in Wet Hot American Summer where it is a fake beard because he did back to shoot.
He had to go back and shoot, and so it is a fake beard.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. You guys are wonderful, and I'm glad we've been friends all these years.
Likewise.
And I hope we continue to blah, blah, slather, slather, lick, lick, kiss.
Oh, that's not going to happen.
What?
No, I mean, yes, for sure.
Yay. All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
You want to say it, Jonah?
Enjoy your burrito.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
Gen Z high school girls have gone through a lot. So what could and did send a shockwave through a group of 50 of them competing in one of the nation's biggest scholarship competitions? I'm your host, Shimo Liai, and I'm going to take you behind the scenes of the Distinguished Young Women Competition. I was Nevada's competitor 20 years ago, but this time, a Supreme Court decision catapults all 50 girls into the center of a nationwide debate about their rights. These girls, who have spent months fighting to make it to nationals, are faced with a tough decision. Do they speak up for their political beliefs, or do they stay focused on winning the money?
I think it's going to get ugly.
Follow the competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of the competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.